they were to disqualify Kelsey, they would have to move it out of the county. Why would that be?
Well, because there's not another judge that's not demonstrated his lack of impartiality.
Well, wait a minute now, but they wouldn't admit they weren't impartial. They would claim they were impartial.
Well, I'm sure they would claim that, but the history, I mean, $100,000 bail, who gets to sit on his trial after they put $100,000 bail on him?
But, I mean, wouldn't an appeals judge say, hey, that doesn't matter, that he was a dangerous character,
well,
otherwise...
come on, man, we haven't incarcerated or executed a crooked judge in all of the 56 years I've been on the planet, so I doubt seriously that you would get anything bordering on truth. Yeah, they're bound to say anything.
Well, I mean, wasn't Jerry guilty of possibly provoking an economic downturn by his ragged clothing in the shopping center? I mean, isn't social cleansing necessary for the economic health of our community?
Oh, I'm sure that's the argument of those piss-ass, piss-poor merchants that are looking for excuses outside their store. I mean, for example, the restraining order that they got against him to keep him away from the coffee shop was based on that. Now, restraining orders require a course of conduct, a serious threat, you know, cause a serious person to be threatened for their life, and there was none of that involved in this. The essence of the reason for issuing the restraining order against him from the coffee shop was that because of him, according to the manager was having sleepless nights and heart palpitations.
You know, I think that we should have the same kind of injunction with respect to the city council, because they're provoking lots of sleepless nights for homeless people.
Well, yeah, but what's more interesting is that it never occurred to anybody to look at the fact that the manager of a coffee shop might be having sleepless nights and heart palpitations because he's a manager of a coffee shop.
Oh,
know,
well,
could have been the caffeine?
That's a little too obvious. Let's not, come on now. So, here he is going to trial. We're talking about Jerry Henry tomorrow at 10:30 in Department 2 for all you folks who want to show up.
That's the theory, and the one thing that I've got on there that I'm looking at that I think is because there are people that I think are credible and good people that for some reason believe that this guy, this district attorney, is not stupid, there's one other outside chance. And that is that this new DA really does want to be elected. And he's running against a gal by the name of Kate Canlis, who is involved heavily in getting all this stuff against Jerry started during the Danner administration. And if he walks into that courtroom on Monday and yanks Kovacevich out of there and fires him and makes a statement about there will be no more political crap out of the DA's office, the sheriff cannot get us to prosecute these things, I'm not going to tolerate it, this has gone on long enough, I gave Kovacevich all the rope he needed to hang himself, that is the only thing that I can think of that will save Ruiz's butt on this one. Otherwise, it's like Judge Kelsey said, on the bench, to the ADA, in open court.
ADA being the district attorney, Kovacevich.
Yeah, Kovacevich. Mm-hmm. This is civil.
A civil case. Can you explain for us who are not so legally sophisticated why? First of all, what are the charges against Henry generally? I mean, I know you don't...
Well, they generally are public nuisance charges, and it's civil.
So he's...
So if they want him out of there, that what Kelsey told him was that the shopping center should go get a lawyer and sue him for being a public nuisance and get him abated. Much like we did when they blocked off the entire seating area in front of the liquor store during their campaign to run Jerry Henry off.
And to run off young people, too, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They barricaded that whole area off, and Jerry put up the money, and Kate and I went into court and sued the shopping center to have that thing removed as a nuisance.
Mm-hmm. Meaning so that people could sit down again.
Yeah, because there was no reason for it to be there, and, of course, the day that they were supposed to start the trial, they took it all down to render the lawsuit moot, but they removed the nuisance. So the only nuisance that's ever been in that shopping center, besides the sheriff's office and all that, but I mean the only one we could really get to was that, and the only nuisance that's ever been removed from that shopping center by law was at Jerry's hand. Kind of interesting, I thought.
Jerry, because he filed the lawsuit.
He put up the money, yeah.
Right.
It was me against the shopping center, but it was Jerry that put up the money.
So, as I understand it then, tomorrow there will be, who knows, whether it's 20 or 10, but certainly at least 10 charges, misdemeanor charges, total,
yeah.
He's facing 10 years in jail if he gets convicted.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
That's the story.
And these charges include such things as trespass to interfere with a business, public nuisance.
That's essentially it.
And trespass to interfere with a business, what kind of a charge is that, and what does that mean?
Well, it's a 602.1, and that bill came, that's an interesting law, too. I don't know if you have time for the history on that. We looked it up. We got a hold of the legislative history from Sacramento. What had happened was that there was a situation happened down in, I think it was one of the beach cities down in Los Angeles. I want to say Redondo, but it wasn't. Manhattan Beach. And they had an ice cream parlor or something down there, and a bunch of kids got in there and were being rowdy, and the owners asked them to leave, and they refused to leave, and the cops arrested them for trespassing. And so the DA, what the DAs do is they hire college students in the summer to prosecute minor offenses so that they get practice in litigation. I swear to you, this is the way it's working.
Amazing.
And so they took this young college student, and he took the case, and he tried to prosecute these guys for trespassing under 602F, I think it is, or something, and lost the case. He didn't prosecute them for the statute that was already there, which was disturbing the peace.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd have picked that one instead, he'd probably got the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. So out of his frustration from not being able to prosecute these young people under the wrong charge, he went to the legislature, and the legislature wrote 602.1, which is intentional interference with a business, not leaving when you're asked to leave, which is just a second disturbing the peace statute, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no case law on it. I mean, the courts haven't gone in and ruled on it one way or the other, so it's the perfect place to go if you haven't got anything to charge anybody with. You can run in and charge them with that,
mm-hmm.
You see? So it makes a legitimate complaint against, at least until it gets to the appellate court.
When was this law passed?
95.
Mm-hmm. So Jerry has been charged with multiple counts of trespass and with the intention of interfering with a business.
Oh, yeah.
Does that mean he was walking in the store, lying down on the floor?
No.
What behavior are they claiming?
I got arrested for it being 40 foot from the door of the Gottschalk store.
Now, what were you doing 40 feet from the door that had you arrested?
I was talking to a guy about why I was going to run for sheriff.
Well, that could be dangerous for the business. That would be interfering with the business.
I mean,
you don't want to have, you know, their men taken out of power from the sheriff's office.
Yeah, they didn't have, like I told you, they didn't have anything to charge me with, so she arrested me for that. The sheriff's office
was
shouting
that. Who arrested you?
A woman by the name of Claudia Easterby.
Oh, you're talking about the woman who's the manager of Gottschalk's in the Aptos Rancho Del Mar. Oh, she's no longer there?
No.
I see.
Nobody's really sure where she went.
She's been spirited out of town before the trial.
I don't really know. Nobody seems to know where she's been. But you know what's funny?
Uh-huh.
The new manager of that store
doesn't
seem to have any problems running her business without coming out and interfering with the kids or harassing anybody or arresting anybody. The store seems to be doing quite well under new management.
Hmm, interesting.
And as far as I can tell, except for the absence of Jerry Henry, all the other things that everybody was complaining about are still the same.
Like?
Kids hang out, you know, play hacky sack, play their guitars, talk, read, you know, stuff like that, all those sinful things.
Well, doesn't that kind of, lead to drugs and violence and sexual misconduct?
Well, I'm sure that it does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that it does, at least in these people's minds. What goes on in the minds of a delusional, paranoid, delusional,
well,
I don't know.
Wait a minute, doesn't that lead to gang problems and illegal sleeping in vehicles? And we got to look at where this all leads to, man.
Well, I know. Yeah. And they absolutely can't wait for it to get there. Why do you think that they're now putting sheriffs into middle schools?
Well, they've got to keep an eye on these youngsters.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Sentinel was telling us how this is really an important thing, and I think we have to stick with the Sentinel. After all, they're accurate in these matters.
Well, all of these things have been done before, and they were extremely effective, and I think that people ought to look at it. If you look at the track record of this type of bureaucratic behavior, it has always been successful in the past.
Successful in?
Well, getting the population, general population, in line.
So you're talking about social cleansing? I of course, have
been
speaking sarcastically.
Well, yeah, look at Nazi Germany. In 1942, 43, Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
They didn't have any rebellion. They didn't have any people speaking out. They didn't have anybody, you know, doing anything that the police state police said don't do.
Right, well, that's true. Of course, we've got to note that in 1942 U.S., you didn't have too many people speaking out either. If you're Japanese, they ship you to a concentration camp. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, they'll put you in jail. I mean, there was a pretty heavy stuff going on against local folks, too, during the war. But I think your point is well taken. Right?
Well, what we're doing is we are instituting. We are following the identical path to Nazi Germany. If you sit there and you look at what they did, all these little things that they're doing, all these types of social cleansing and harassment of people that don't suit them, and The next thing is the concentration camps. That's the next thing that's coming.
No, we don't call them concentration camps. They're work centers where people are retrained to do better things.
Exactly. That's what they call them there, too.
Yeah, they get case management there,
as soon
Richard.
As the doctors get involved in diagnosing the homeless with some malady that needs treatment, you'll start seeing them get rounded up.
Which brings me to the point I was actually going to be talking about in today's show with George Cavallo, ombudsperson advocate. We have a bill coming up here at the state level called AB 1800, and I'm going to briefly talk to you about this, maybe get your reaction to it. Is that possible?
I'm on the phone, dude. You got me.
All right.
Got my full attention.
Here we have Assembly Bill 1800 seeks to modify the Lanterman-Petras Short Act. That's the law that provides for committing people under 5150s if they are danger self, danger to others, or gravely disabled.
Here we go.
Yes, this proposes a dramatic broadening of the current standard for involuntary inpatient commitment by allowing individuals who might be at a risk of physical or psychiatric harm in the absence of treatment to be detained.
They can write from the transcript of the Third Reich. It's right there.
That's not all. Let me continue. This is a state law coming up for a vote. It lengthens certain commitment periods and reduces the level of proof necessary to commit a person on a long-term basis.
There you go.
This bill would also establish a program of outpatient commitment. That is to say, you can be court-ordered to be committed even if you're not, being held in a hospital, which would permit a person who is non-compliant with a six-month outpatient treatment program to be re-hospitalized.
Yep.
It further seeks to modify capacity hearing procedures that currently occur prior to the involuntary administration of psychotropic medication. And the English translation of that is, right now you have a kind of a hearing before they shoot you up the ass with Thorazine.
Right.
After this, you don't get that kind of hearing anymore.
Correct.
Now, this is a very serious bill, and I was going to talk about it with George Cavallo.
I chuckled not because it's funny, ha-ha. I chuckled because it's unbelievable, ha-ha. We've seen it all before. You ask the average citizen in this country who the worst demagogue was in the history of mankind, and they will tell you Adolf Hitler. But this is his design. This is right out of the Third Reich. This is exactly what they did. This is one of the steps.
Ironically, a lot of the Third Reich's eugenics stuff came from the United States. You may know that, or perhaps you don't.
Well, sure.
Yeah, originally there was a big eugenics movement that talked about sterilizing inferior races.
Yeah.
And this racial talk wasn't, some sort of wild and crazy theory of Hitler's. This was widely, it was actually held by liberals who thought it would be a way of improving the race,
There's
races.
Nothing more
it was eugenics, it was
than
called.
Than a liberal fascist, my friend. There's nothing more disgusting or more dangerous than a liberal fascist.
Well, I hope that we can all go into court tomorrow to support Jerry Henry. I mean, there's a chance they're going to pull some shit again. I mean, they're going to drop it again on the edge of trial.
I don't think so.
You think they're going to proceed with their trial?
One of two things will happen. Either the DA... has had this thing planned all along, has just given Kovacevic enough rope to completely hang himself, or they're actually going to try to do this. And Kelsey told them, the higher courts have never upheld this kind of criminal conviction, ever. If they get the conviction, all that will do is give them the period of appeal to keep Jerry Henry out of that shopping center and to punish him for something he hasn't done until the appellate court overrules it.
I wish Jerry were more of an organizer, because I would have liked to have seen people walking around with "I am Jerry Henry," like "I am Spartacus," "I am Jerry Henry" signs all over the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, who maybe even wear Jerry Henry masks. It seems incredible.
How long have you been in this business, man? How long have you been involved in the rights movement?
Oh, at least a decade.
When have you ever known? When you start talking about getting a bunch of people together, when have you ever known that to be feasible?
Well,
way to go. I understand the desire.
Sure, it has happened occasionally, like when we had the sitting ban protest in 1994 after city council passed the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, which is still present in Santa Cruz in weakened form. We did have hundreds of people who flooded the streets and sat down.
Oh, yes, but these are people that whose area of focus is Santa Cruz, because Santa Cruz has been long seen around the world as one of the last places for, the true liberal mentality, you know, people are accepted for who they are and they're not judged and all that crap, so that this behavior has gone up against the reputation of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So they're apt to come down and do that. But to come to Aptos, which is sort of the Beverly Hills of Santa Cruz County, it's unlikely that people are going to have the commitment in their heart. You know, it's just not a heartfelt thing to save Aptos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I doubt seriously that would ever happen. I this whole rally folks together to do stuff is not something that I believe in anymore. I'm absolutely convinced that it'll always be a handful. It'll always be a handful of people.
Let me ask you this about, I probably disagree with you on that, but on the other hand, sometimes I definitely see you're right.
Well, there's 500,000 people in California that have a motorcycle use license. Half of those people without helmet laws would not wear a helmet. So there's 250,000 motorcycle riders today that are going to be riding around out there with helmets on that don't want to. Do you know how many of them are riding around without helmets on to do something about the law?
Tell me.
One.
Don't tell me his name. I think that would be self-incrimination.
Yeah, I think you're talking to him.
Exactly. You know, you've also been concerned about social cleansing, not just in the Jerry Henry trial, which begins tomorrow at 10:30 in Department 2, and I invite everyone to come for... That's jury selection, right?
Yeah.
That's down at 701 Ocean Street, and that's...
Yeah, Department 2.
In Department 2, Kelsey's Court. But also, you have been noting, and you live up in the Santa Cruz County hills.
Yeah.
You have been noting some interesting practices by planning commission inspectors, or how would you put it? Tell us a little about that.
The planning department was the head of the planning department, who's a black man that lives in Pleasanton. And the only reason I say he's a black man is because the focus of the we're trying to do a community TV special, and I want to get his perspective as a black man of his role in the social cleansing of Santa Cruz County by the planning department. Because what they do is they're running around, where they collect these complaints from these yuppies, and you know the yuppie motto, buy a piece of land, turn in your neighbors. And they're running around cotton these yuppies, and they're digging out people that are living in less than approved dwellings 8 miles out of town in the woods, you know, where they could find minor infractions and harass people over it to run them out. It's all about running them out of Santa Cruz. They want to get all the hippies out of the hills in Santa Cruz. And so the planning department's right on that. We had a guy up here last week, 8 miles out of town, looking around for people that might have trailers parked in the woods, you know, somewhere, someone living in a mother-in-law's shack that wasn't authorized, this kind of thing. And you're going to see that the stuff we have for the special, what we got on video just that one day, it's going to blow your mind. I mean, blow your mind. This guy was up here on a complaint that he'd received less than 2 months ago on some trailers being occupied this far out of town. And these are, mind you, 5 to 18 acre parcels, you know. It's not exactly like we've got a real problem here. But he talks about the fact that he has 900 complaints that he's working on. Now, it seems to me that if they were just doing this by the book, it'd be at least a couple of years till they got around to the ones he received 30 days ago. You know what I mean? So they're using all these devices to go run the riffraff out of the mountains in Santa Cruz. Get them on the street. Get them all down there with all the rest of the homeless folk. Get everybody homeless. And then declare that if they
sleep in a vehicle.
Well, if they weren't mentally ill, they wouldn't put up with being homeless. They'd go get a job, and then they go ahead and start doing the Thorazine and stick them in the pokey and all that shit. Here we
Needles
go.
Needles on Wheels is what they're calling the new program, which now, by the way, is law in 40 to 44 states. If you don't take your meds, they come to your house, and then they incarcerate you again. That is, in fact, I know it sounds like something out of, you know, a novel by George Orwell.
Yeah.
But it's actually happening in New York as we talk.
Oh, yeah.
California is next, folks. Yep. AB 1800. Look it up.
Oh, that whole thing is scary. It is just scary. And I encourage you, Robert, I encourage you to find out when those things are going to committee.
Mm-hmm. And pass that word on to folks.
Well, no. Go there.
Well, I'd have to take my meds first.
Well, but I mean, go to Sacramento. I don't know that you've ever done that. And I'm going to tell you something, my friend. There is a thing that those guys never see. Nobody ever shows up. All they ever talk to is lobbyists. But when those things go into committee, I go there. When there are issues that I deal with, I go there. Well, and I sit there and I make those people deal with what they're doing. I make them deal with what they're who they're doing it to. Mm-hmm. When they passed the Safe Streets Act of 1994, which was when they declared driving to be a privilege so they could start stealing cars in this state at a rate of 500 a day, I went to Sacramento. I sat there and took one of the co-authors off his own bill in committee. It passed anyway, but if I hadn't been there, he would have voted for it, and as it worked out, because I was there and I spoke up, they didn't.
Good
and I
you.
Encourage you, I encourage you to make every committee hearing on that. Go up there and let them get your piece on the record.
Well, you know, Sacramento is also the site of homeless protests, and so I may be able to make a joint trip in order to do that.
Well, if you just go up there by yourself and take a place in line and sit at that table and talk to those people, by God, I'm telling you, it makes a difference, Robert. It makes a difference. You're well-spoken, you're well-read, you know the issue, and I have every reason to believe that when that bill gets far enough that it's into some committee, and I know when it's going to be there, don't be surprised. Yep. This old long-haired, hippie-looking sucker will be sitting at that table beating those legislators up for their goddamn elitist, fascist attitudes. Don't be at all surprised.
Not to mention ignorant attitudes.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people believe that, you know, they are genuinely... I think even people in Nazi Germany were, you know, they didn't think they were acting in an evil fashion. They thought they were trying to help people by
Absolutely.
Rounding them up, putting them in concentration camps,
Absolutely.
Getting rid of those disruptive socialists, making
what
sure those degenerate gays got off the streets.
Yeah, what the guy said when he got off his own bill on the Safe Streets Act,
mm-hmm.
when I wrote to him and thanked him for his courage to go against his own bill, he wrote back to me, and thanked me for coming up and making an appearance, and said that upon further contemplation, that it did seem like the law was a little too heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, no, they're not terrible, evil people. They're just lost in this thing.
Right.
And so...
Well, you know, I was at a hearing actually two nights ago around the City Planning Commission, which is trying to give the powers to inspectors that the county inspectors now have. Right
oh,
now,
Jesus.
City inspectors, of course, don't have the power to just march in unless there's a specific complaint, whereas apparently county inspectors have more power. If they observe something from a distance, they can do it. And you were telling me that there's a sort of process where they observe that a road hasn't been made. Were you the person who was telling me this?
No, but they don't do that.
What do they do?
They don't do that. According to the guy that was up here, they don't move except by complaint. If they see something, they don't do anything about it.
I see, but they have the power to.
I don't know.
Because at least that's what they're trying to give the city inspectors the power to. And I know we were speaking out against that, suggesting that if they had that power in projects like the Dolphin Lee, where they're trying to bulldoze apartments that people have lived in for a decade or more in order to get a fancy, pretty new low-income housing project that many of these people won't be able to qualify for.
Sure.
They can condemn it if they want, if they get these new inspection rules without getting the permission of tenants or without getting real complaints about real problems on the property. If they just notice things from a distance, they can start moving in, and it's a dangerous situation.
Well, yeah.
We're talking to Richard Quigley, and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. This is the Free Station. Our phone number is 427-3772. Free doesn't mean we don't have to pay for the privilege of doing this. We don't pay the FCC, but we have to pay for the upkeep of all this tapes and microphones, equipment, rental space, bandages when we get lopped on the head and all that sort of thing. So we do need your help, and if you're interested in helping Free Radio, give a call to 427-4523. That's our voicemail, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz. Or we're on the net at frsc@microradio.net. We're talking to Richard Quigley, who's an activist in his own right, and I guess you'll be down there at court Monday, that's tomorrow,
yeah.
at Jerry Henry's trial, 10:30. I understand he's pushing for a jury trial. He's not going to go for a leave it in the hands of Judge Kelsey, though some have suggested that the judge doesn't like what the DA is doing and might be more lenient. He wants to take it to the people.
Well, apparently his attorney does. My attitude is that, you know, he asked me about that because he does talk to me about these things. And what I told him was is that something like that where somebody's going to jail if they make the wrong choice, you know, that I'm not going to make any recommendation. But my observation in that regard is that when I went after Charlie Crompton for use of excessive force when he grabbed me and pushed me on the street down there on January 19th, 1985, citation number 65466, by the way, is what was issued that day, but he couldn't keep his hands to himself. And
this was a deputy or a sheriff? Or
No, he's a Capitola cop.
Uh-huh.
Real jerk. Anyway, I ended up suing him, having to sue him. Kelsey heard the case. And on the one hand, as I told Jerry, he did find that the cop used excessive force. In fact, his ruling was, I believe you, I don't believe the officer.
Mm-hmm.
So
sounds
that
rare.
Would tend to make you believe that maybe Kelsey's the right guy to be doing that, you know, call off the jury and go. But then the flip side of that is that he awarded me a dollar.
Well, I'm told you didn't give him specific damages in order to determine what injuries have been
presented. No, I asked for punitive and exemplary, and punitive damages are for the purpose of discouraging behavior.
I got you. But you didn't
so
look
he
for...
he had all the latitude in the world.
I got you. You didn't look for compensatory, though, damages.
Well, there were not.
I see.
No,
well,
the only thing I was trying to do was I made a promise to that cop on that day in the street when he put his hands on me, and that was, I told him... that he would learn to keep his hands to himself. And I never thought for a minute that would be a promise I couldn't keep.
Mm-hmm.
But to this day, I still have not been able to keep that promise.
He's still going around putting his hands on other people?
Oh, God, Cuff 'em and Club 'em Crompton is what they call him.
Well,
he's as bad as anybody I've ever heard you talk about in Santa Cruz.
Well, it's interesting. I wish we had a Capitola correspondent. I know we often get Merlin calling in about the rent control situation. Indeed, there was a Capitola City Council meeting, I think, on Thursday recently. And maybe he'll give us an update. But I'm going to thank you, Richard, and sign off and hope to see you tomorrow in court at 10:30. And I invite any listeners to come in. And if anyone has any questions about this case, give a call to 423-HUFF. That's the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You can also, of course, call into the studio at 427-3772. Lines will be open as soon as I cut you off there, Richard. Anything else you want to say?
I want to thank you before you get away for bringing that bill to my attention. I will keep an eye on that thing, and like I said, don't be surprised if you go up there and find out that I'm sitting there waiting to testify on that.
I would be most pleased.
I'll talk to you later, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
And at last, the phone lines are open, but nope, here's a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Boy, Robert, I'm sorry to be calling again.
Number three. Better make this short, David.
Well, okay. First of all, I won't be able to go to your organizing meeting there in Harvey West. I'm going to be in the SCAN Elections Committee meeting tonight,
uh-huh.
Making sure that the speaking ban repeal stays number one priority.
Excellent.
but I have spoken to the Nader campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ralph Nader sent, when we had our Safe Sleeping Zones concert, he sent a statement that was read by Celia Scott, presuming that we were going with a Safe Sleeping Zones proposal. Now that he's heard what's happened, he's going to come here in August and campaign very hard for the repeal of the sleeping ban. And that's a promise from Ralph Nader. So I thought I'd let you guys know that that's what's happening. Would you like to hear the two short paragraph statement that Celia Scott read to the...
Sure, why don't you do that?
Okay, Nader's sleeping mess statement. Congratulations to... This is all history now, but congratulations to Santa Cruz for leading the way on a problem that faces most communities around the nation, homelessness. I understand that for the city to secure the human right to sleep, it has had to come to a broad community consensus and develop this experimental approach called Safe Sleeping Zones. I congratulate you and wish you the greatest luck in your endeavor. As I told your local reporters in March, homelessness is one of our five key issues in this campaign. Many cities have had sleeping bans. The courts have had to strike them down one after the other. Most recently, Austin, Texas, has had its entire camping ban lifted. Santa Cruz is the first city I know of that has a government by the people willing to correct this grave injustice. And now he knows that that was a betrayal, and he's going to come speak about that betrayal.
I sure hope so, because we've heard this from him before.
Yeah, he's going to, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've got a commitment just this morning.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Sure.
Well, I'm from Missouri. Show me, please. But, yeah, I hope so, and I'm glad that David is on it, trying to get it to happen. In the meantime, since we don't have Ralph Nader in the streets with us, parked in a vehicle monitoring the police, it's going to have to be us, and I invite people to come to Harvey West as David is working for keeping the SCAN resolution, and it's been for years they've said they want to end the sleeping ban. The real question is whether they're going to put money, time, energy, and organization into a real election campaign, and that's the question. It's going to take thousands of dollars to do, and that's why I've been skeptical about all this, but if it happens, great. I'm 100% for it. You're tuned to Free Radio, and I also want to point out a few other things. There are two Well, there's at least one chief motivation that really began the pressuring by Mike Schmidt, the CEO for the Area Chamber of Commerce that I mentioned, starting in January, well, when the City Council ignored the Homeless Issues Task Force's midterm report, and it's urging that the entire camping ordinance, not just the sleeping ban sections, be put on hold, considering that there was so much violence against homeless people and no places for people to go legally, putting them in a position where they couldn't use the police services because they had warrants out, where they couldn't sleep in groups safely because they couldn't sleep in well-lit areas, which is all now going to be the case. Thank you, Catherine Byers. Phone number 420-5020, and wait for the message that will tell you what extension to call. And you can call her right now and tell her, Catherine, this is not going to be something we're going to accept from you. I'm sorry. Anyway, here's a story. Two men held an attack. The 49-year-old homeless man had no clue why he was viciously beaten last August 12th. I didn't even know the guys, said Charles English at the trial of his two alleged attackers. I had no problem with them. Assistant District Attorney Gail Zuckerman said English became a target while sitting on a bench near Washington Lane and Limekiln Pike about 4 a.m. English was waiting for daybreak so he could make some money cleaning a nearby church. He never made it. He wound up in a hospital with a broken jaw and various other injuries. His attackers knocked out seven of his teeth. He now has permanent nerve damage to his mouth, the prosecutor said. After a jury heard the evidence this week, Tracy Plummer, 19, and James Jarman, 18, both of Agonse Avenue, near 74th Avenue. This is the Daily News. So the city we're talking about here is Philadelphia. Both these men were convicted of aggravated assault and conspiracy. Common Pleas Judge John J. Chiavero committed them to prison to await sentencing. Zuckerman and English had been victimized because the men were looking for, quote, someone they could beat, quote-unquote. A few hours before the assault, Jarman had lost a fight with another man, and, quote, they decided they were going to take advantage of someone, unquote, said Zuckerman, and, quote, they figured English was someone they could take, unquote. About 5 minutes before the attack, the two approached English as he sat next to his bag of belongings. I see the caller, so hang in there, caller. We're going to finish this up, and then we'll pick up on you. What are you doing out here? Asked Plummer. Are you alone? English explained he didn't have a place to stay. Don't you ever get scared? Asked Plummer. Don't you have anybody with you? Jarman stood silently holding a bottle of liquor. The two men then walked across the street to talk to a woman, then returned and began beating English. While English was on the ground, he was kicked several times and punched in the back of his head, said Zuckerman. Life is hard enough for English. The defendants chose to make it worse when they brutally beat him, Zuckerman said. That's a story from Philadelphia.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is me, Nina.
Hi, Nina.
I'm calling because I have the direct number for Catherine Byers.
Yes.
If people want to call in.
Sure.
Her direct line is 420-5022.
420-5022 to call Catherine Byers. And we're not talking about her home, though perhaps people have suggested even before this that her home number could be used. But this is her business number, so she's not even being disturbed at home while her police are running around busily disturbing homeless people because she doesn't have the fortitude to stand up for basic rights for homeless people. Nana, while you're on the line, I know that I was going to give you time, and I'm going to give you a few moments now to talk about what's been happening with Residente Unidos. I know that last we heard, I know you were on the air here with Alma Perez, who's was the teen spokesperson, or the spokesperson, actually, for Residente Unidos way back in March when you tried to speak before our Mercy Charities housing meeting, and Amy Bailey, who was chairing that meeting, shut you down. I know also that you have, the group asked that we send out a letter to Mercy Charities, which I did yesterday, requesting information on a number of issues. Mercy Charities is the group the City Council has unilaterally chosen to do all its low-income housing projects. It has, of course, restrictions that don't allow people in based on past felony convictions. Now, I guess they've changed that so it'll only be felony convictions as of a certain date in the future, but it could still exclude people who are looking for housing. They also have rather restrictive rules in their own projects they're running, like at Sycamore Commons and Neary Lagoon. So I guess your group is looking for Residente Unidos. I should say our group, because I'm a part of that group, is looking for other low-income providers to come and speak and talk to the group and suggest how they would run a low-income housing project. But why don't you tell me what's been happening?
Well, basically, we went into City Council, and we didn't get our guarantees like we were asking for about 4 months now.
The guarantees you've been looking for are the guarantees that every single person that is whose house gets bulldozed, because that's what they're planning to do with the Lee and Dolphin apartments, gets complete relocation funding for the entire period of time that they are required to look for alternate housing, and also that each one of them gets back into the new project, correct?
Yes. And it also goes into about the application process that people have to go through to get back in, which we are against. We feel that if we live here now, we get guaranteed to come back no matter what. We shouldn't have to go through an application process again. If this project is supposedly for the residents who live here, we feel that that's a way to eliminate people from getting them back. Also, there's a situation about single men. There's a lot of single men who live here together who won't qualify for low-income or low-income apartments. So it's a big issue, and we need to work on that also. We went to City Council. They didn't give us our guarantees yet. We've been asking them for over 4 months now to look at these guarantees, get them signed. Basically, they didn't do anything. The mayor had promised he submitted a resolution, and we submitted a resolution. He only showed his resolution at City Council. He had promised the residents that he would give us a chance, a fair chance, and show our resolution and submit that one. He didn't even do it. He didn't even talk about the changes that he had made on his resolution with us.
Can I say something too?
Uh-huh.
It's also true, and I want to say this because we're giving the mayor a lot of flack, as we should. It's also true that no other council member brought up any of these issues, and each of them was given a copy of this resolution, both at the litigation session at 11 o'clock on Tuesday when they did their council meeting, and at 5 o'clock during the redevelopment session. So it wasn't just Sugar who refused to bring this up. It was every single council member, including Mr. I'm So Hispanic Hernandez,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I'd like you to comment a bit on that. I mean, here's Hernandez championing, you know, attacking Sugar for racist comments, attacking Sugar as a bigot, attacking Sugar for his comments, which have really deeply hurt him. Has Hernandez been any better than Sugar, or has he been worse?
I haven't done anything. He's been worse, actually. He hasn't made racial comments to us, but he's made comments about our apartments are filthy and that they're not in good condition also. But he also, you know, he makes this statement and re-elections are coming up, so it's something we got to think about. He hasn't done nothing to participate in this community. He's not the representative for the Mexican community. I'm sorry, he's not. None of the people feel that way. People say that, you know, I'm sorry, but a lot of the people, residents here, just say that fat ass needs to sit down. He does not represent them.
Well, isn't he also been, more than that, Sugar has kind of kept a hands-off position on Dolphin Lee, but hasn't Hernandez been actively pushing to have these apartments bulldozed with the relocation committee? I mean, isn't he in a way, I'm seeing a sort of hypocrisy here. I think Hernandez is using Sugar's ill-advised comments, you know, to get political advantage when, in fact, it's Hernandez's behavior, which is worse than Sugar's. I mean, Sugar at least talked about guaranteeing something for the tenants. He didn't offer us the guarantees we want. He didn't, but he said he wanted a process for the tenants, and he came to the tenants and at least began to talk to them. He broke a number of promises to them. But Hernandez, and I understand he was supposed to, he's one of the people in your relocation advisory committee, right? The group formed by the city?
Mm-hmm.
That meeting was closed down on Thursday without any consent from the tenants, right?
No, they didn't come talk to us. They just, Veronica Lopez, one of the city employees, showed up with notices saying that the meeting was canceled. You know, we needed to have that meeting that night. It was very important that we got to have that meeting to get together and discuss what had happened at City Council and what we wanted to happen for the future City Council meeting. But they don't want that. The city doesn't want us to get together because they saw that when we go in there, we can make some decisions and ask for things to be done. And they saw that we got Hernandez and Fitzmaurice to have to go back to City Council. They didn't go back willingly. They had to because I made a motion for them to go back and put the guarantees on the agenda and let's talk about it. Let's get us some guarantees. They don't like that. That's why they're stopping meetings.
So by eliminating the meetings, there's no opportunity for you to make a motion to say, go back and ask about,
nope,
you know, where Mercy Charity's funding comes from or what
that's
about
right.
other providers. In essence, they can just sort of stonewall you as the city council has been doing for the last 4 months.
That's right. And that's what they did with canceling this last meeting. But they can't stop us from coming to city council. They can arrest people all they want and try and intimidate us outside, but they're not going to stop us from getting up and speaking and saying what we want. These people are going to keep coming if they like it or not, and they need to get the right amount of equipment to translate into Spanish for these people, because I think that was purposely done too. They had more than a week's notification to get equipment so people could even hear what was going on. And of course, there wasn't even close to enough equipment for these people to understand the translator.
Well, I know that they didn't, that Sugar did not announce before oral communications in Spanish what was going on, that people could speak on issues other than the Dolphin Lee.
No.
I know that he illegally barred me and others from speaking at that oral communications period by saying we had spoke the week before. Now, usually you can say, well, you can't, you have to go to the end of the line, but to bar people from speaking, and there was plenty of time for us to speak, is illegal behavior on his part and violates the Brown Act, as far as I'm concerned. But don't you also have a press conference coming up? I guess it's tomorrow. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Tomorrow at noon, we're going to have a press conference at City Hall, and I'm going to be speaking, but also I'm getting residents here to come and speak to the media also, because it's really important that the issues that's going on right now, I think this Hernandez and Sugar thing, they're really blowing it out of proportion. They're really making it a big deal because they want to get off of the topic. That's what's going on with the project. That's what we need to be speaking about. We don't. What happened happened. The mayor lost the trust of the tenants, the residents, the Mexican community, Salvadoranians. They've lost his trust. They're not going to get it back. He's not going to get it back. But what I could say is that we need to start working together, because we don't have an option. They need to listen to what we want and work with us. But, you know, the people are going to come to this meeting, the press conference, and speak, which is good, because you can actually hear and speak to tenants there also. And the tenants have been coming out and speaking more and more. They are scared, but they're actually, you know, getting more used to getting up and speaking in front of groups now. And it just took a little bit of time, but we really do stuff as a group, and it's working really good, you know, to be there to support each other.
Well, I know that SCAN, which passed a resolution supporting the tenants' desire to have a halt to the project until these guarantees were voted, finally, 3 days after the city council meeting, according to an email from coordinator Skip Spitzer, actually came through with a resolution they were supposed to deliver at least a week before. Any comments on that?
Yeah, well, I feel that I understand that they were contacted before. I had wrote a letter also to them asking what's going on with this, why isn't it delivered. At the June 13th meeting, City Council expressed that they had not received any information about this resolution. How was it going to be delivered to them? You know, I wrote a letter. I understand stuff comes up in lives that makes it so that you can't fulfill your duties that you have to do in certain positions. Things come up for everybody. If someone's in a position where it's urgent, for these residents here, it was urgent that information got to City Council. If someone's having problems and they cannot take care of getting this information delivered, they need to step down from their position, and they need to let someone else do it until they're capable of doing it again.
I know
and
that
that's the responsible thing to
I know
do.
Bernice Belton, of course, was a co-chair of SCAN, and she hasn't said anything to me at all, but Skip Spitzer has claimed that because she is grieving for a lost partner, her husband, who died, I think, in late May, that sort of slowed down the process. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I replied in an email to Spitzer that it didn't slow down a big meeting she held in her house involving Sugar Hernandez, Elizabeth Vogel of Mercy Charities Housing, and other people who were wondering about damage control around the Dolphin Lee. So, I mean, I know that Bernice Belton has been opposed to the, you know, the tenant's position on this, and Skip Spitzer is, you know, his responsibility seems to me because she, you know, may be perceived as partisan. I'm not saying she is. I'm just saying that the perception may be because this resolution was delayed. Have you received an apology from Spitzer at all? Because I know that that's something I requested in an email last night.
No, I haven't.
Well, maybe he hasn't read his emails.
No, but one thing I have to say is that I, you know, I'm sorry that her spouse died. That's a tragedy, and I'm sorry about that. But like you said, she had a big meeting June 7th that no residents were invited to. It was a closed private meeting speaking about residents' home, which she's very opposed to. I feel she sat on that document. She didn't deliver it for a purpose because she voted against it. She didn't want the city council. She didn't want to stop this plan and or anything. She wanted them to go through, do what they were doing, get the plan accepted. So I really feel that if she's able to be holding meetings and doing other stuff, and she needs to be delivering the documentation she has that she's supposed to do, because it's her. That was obviously what her position and what she was supposed to do. Using the excuse that I'm grieving and stuff. I understand she's grieving, but if she's grieving, maybe someone else needs to take the position until she's okay again.
We're talking
because this is very serious issues that need to be taken care of. It can't just sit around and wait until someone has the time to do it.
We're talking to Nena Ruiz of Residentes Unidos. Nena, we're running up against the clock. Anything you want to add before we move on?
Yeah, well, we have a meeting this Friday here at 124 LeBrant Street. In the garage, that's the Lee Complex, at 7 p.m. This Friday, we're going to be talking about our plan for the next city council meeting. Also, we're going to be talking about rent control, which is a big issue that we're going to be working on also. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can get a hold of us at 466-9520. And, you know, we would like support. We'd like people to come down and actually come and participate in the meetings and get to know the residents. I think that's a big issue because there's a lot of people who aren't quite sure how they feel about it. I really feel that the people who don't, you know, understand what's going on need to come down and participate and get involved because they don't have the right information, you know, and I think it's important that they come down.
Thank you, Nena.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Nena Ruiz, Residente Unidos, 466-9520. If you want to talk to her directly, we're running up against the clock, and we have some strict talk show hosts coming on who will kick us off the air the minute they show up in the studio, so we got to move.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, this is Jane Kaiser from PERC.
Hey, Jane, what's up?
Well,
PERC, of course, is a
psychiatric
inmates' rights collective. Thank you.
And yeah. On the outside commitment, we're...
The AB 1800.
So, but that was a few weeks ago.
So we want you to get up on it so on Thursday you can give us a complete rundown, man. I mean, woman.
Hello? Yeah.
Yes. I know we were going to have George Cavallo, ombudsperson who, you know, covers such things, comes and defends folks at drug hearings, that is to say hearings about forced medication, but unfortunately we didn't meet him, he didn't meet us, somehow we didn't get together. Can we get you maybe on the Thursday show to talk more about this issue from 6 to 8 in the evening, which is when we come back here on 96.3? Is that a possibility?
Awesome.
Maybe by phone, if not in person.
I could drop some information off, but actually outside commitment's been happening.
I got you. Maybe we can do is interview you off air and then play that speech on the air.
Okay, because I know you're in a hurry.
Yeah, if you want to say something, go for it, but we only have about like a minute or two to give you.
Well, not really. It's just...
Well, collect your thoughts, because I know you often have a lot of thoughtful things to say, and I will, in fact, talk to you at greater length, and we'll put your recorded comments on the air.
Bye-bye.
Fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Oh, that's me running everybody off the air. Whoops, another phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I got some phone numbers for you before you get off.
Go ahead, Doug.
We got Don Hubbard...
Harvey West Association?
Right. His number is 462-3690.
462-3690.
ARC Animal Hospital is 426-3399.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor there is in a association like Harvey West Association. It's called Natural Bridges.
Uh-huh.
And that is held, those meetings are held at Texas Instruments, which is 425-1010, and who you want to speak with there would be called Don Masick, M-A-S-I-K, and that's Human Resources Department.
So these are numbers to call. These are the folks who are championing the NIMBY approach to the whole safe zones, and they're the people who, in essence, are being used to, as an excuse by the council to kill it, right?
Right, and I'm still working on more phone numbers.
Thank you, Doug.
Okay.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Of course, we hope to see you tonight, Doug, as well as the rest of you out there who we can't see right now, but hopefully you're listening to us. You can hear us at the Du Bois and Harvey West at 7:30. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Sorry to call again. I just got a flash on the email. The Santa Cruz Sentinel is conducting a poll, and the safe sleeping zones is losing by like about 68% to 32%.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think people know about this. Can I give you the website?
Please do.
Where people can go vote?
Please do.
It's the http://. Then it's www.santa-cruz.com/index.html. And it's right on the front page on the left-hand column, the second thing down on the left-hand column. Mm-hmm. You can vote yes or no on safe sleeping zones.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Great, thank you.
So if you missed that email address, give a call to 423-HUFF. We're going off the air shortly. We'll be able to give you that email. And please do call in if you favor safe sleeping zones and let the Sentinel know. I should say email in or website check in on that if you have a computer and pass on the word to other people. Here's a story from Toronto, which may be encouraging. Whatever it takes, that's the motto of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, central organizers of the violent protest Thursday outside the Ontario legislature that saw brick-hurling protesters spar with baton-wielding riot police. The group, led by the outspoken John Clark, represents the homeless in Toronto and has battled police and politicians almost constantly throughout its 11-year history. It began as a coalition of homeless organizations in Toronto, often aligning itself with the Mohawk Nation and the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, among other labor and social justice groups. Clark is calling for an end to cuts in welfare, which have reached more than 21% in Ontario, as well as the abolition of the city's Tenant Protection Act, which he says allows landlords to, quote, gouge low-income tenants. In addition, the group wants to put an end to the Safe Streets Act, which bans, quote, aggressive panhandling by the likes of squeegee kids and street beggars. We've seen enough token protests and attempts to tug at your non-existent heartstrings, the coalition said in an open letter to Premier Mike Harris in March, drafted at the general membership meeting. We intend to see mobilization against you and all you stand for taken to a level that is powerful and disruptive enough that your hateful government can no longer proceed with its agenda, unquote. The group, which says it represents thousands of homeless people and low-income families in Toronto and surrounding areas, has heralded the protest as, quote, the beginning of a summer of resistance, unquote. Note, however, it does not advocate violence. That's the media talking. I don't think they advocate violence. They probably respond to police violence, and we'll see what happens here. Continuing the story from Toronto by Michelle Osborne, homeless group marks June 15th as start of a, quote, summer of resistance. Among the most recent protests organized by the group, which have escalated since the Harris Tories took power in 1995 in Canada, are February 2000, members of the group stormed a posh downtown hotel restaurant. August 1999, a three-day protest in a downtown park, which had demonstrators spending the night in makeshift camps, ending with their expulsion by police. February 1999, a protest organized by the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty and the Canadian Labour Congress on Parliament Hill turned ugly and 11 people were arrested. November 1998, 13 people were arrested for trespassing after they stormed an abandoned Toronto hospital and demanded it be opened as a shelter for the homeless. March 1997, police evicted a group of homeless people and charged about 20 with trespassing. The group and the coalition broke into a three-story apartment complex to help raise the issue of homelessness. February 1996, homeless people led by representatives of the coalition storm a men's hostel to protest the treatment of the homeless. The group targets the rich, saying it is unfair that those with higher incomes continue to get richer under the current government while they struggle to put food on the table and pay the rent. Quote, our brothers and sisters die in the streets while the rich profit from our poverty, the coalition's website reads. Clark, who turned to professional activism in 1982 when he was laid off from a factory job in London, Ontario, has been known to all but justify the violence of his group's protests. Notice the wording. Quote, if what took place here today is ugly, dying in an alleyway or in a bloody park of exposure is a great deal more ugly, unquote, Clark said at Parliament Hill protest more than a year ago. During Thursday's angry confrontation with police, Clark told reporters, quote, the real violence is what's happening on the streets, unquote. Clark has also advocated squatting when homeless people break into abandoned buildings and essentially take up residence. Toronto Mayor Mel Lastman has called the protest organizer a, quote, thug, unquote, and his followers, quote, professional bums. Boy, sounds like Lee Kornstrom. Anyway, that's from the Toronto's Canadian Press copyright, and it's a story about June 15th as the start of a summer of resistance in Toronto. Here's a story from the 16th, Friday the 16th, from Toronto. One day after rocks and Molotov cocktails were thrown in a riot at the Ontario legislature, insults and accusations were hurled by both sides. 29 people charged in the clash with police were released on a $1,000 bail Friday and told to stay at least 500 meters away from Queen's Park. All the men and women spent the night in jail. Police say more charges may be laid once they review videotape of the confrontation. Gaon Herous, quote, we had a proud day, said we had a proud day yesterday, proud because we stood up, said Gaetan Herous. of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, which organized the demonstration, and, quote, "We are not going to be denied." But Premier Mike Harris said that violence was, quote, "totally inappropriate," and, quote, arguing that people don't need to break the laws to get their message across. Mike Harris talked to reporters, quote, "I don't think it has any place in a democratic free society, a law-abiding society like Canada and Ontario," he told reporters Friday. The demonstrators faced charges ranging from taking part in a riot to assaulting a police officer. Charges, note, charges. Those sound like the kind of charges that the May 22nd protesters of last year faced, such as Steve Argue, for defending a woman who was being, shall we say, threatened by Officer Lefebvre, an officer no longer on the police force. About 1,000 protesters marched on the grounds of the legislature on Thursday afternoon. When turned away from the doors, some pushed down barricades and threw homemade explosives, I'm not sure what those would be, as well as anything they could find, including placards, dirt, bricks ripped from a pathway, and heavy rocks from a nearby garden. Protest organizers say demonstrators were provoked because police used force against them. The police say some of the protesters came wearing helmets and gas masks and were planning to attack. Of course, you might say they were planning to defend themselves. I don't know. Ontario Premier Mike Harris said the violent confrontation won't make him change his government's policies. Harris said even if he'd agreed to meet homeless activists, it would not have prevented the violence. So he didn't agree to meet homeless activists. Police in riot gear, some on horseback, charged repeatedly to disperse the crowd. Dozens of officers carrying shields and batons clubbed some of the protesters. They hit others with bursts of pepper spray. Dozens of people were hurt, including at least 28 police officers. It's not known how many protesters were injured. The afternoon began with a peaceful parade to Queen's Park. Witnesses said violence erupted when a delegation of anti-poverty groups and homeless advocates were refused entry into the legislature to talk to the premier. It sounds like they're being refused entry into a public building. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know what Canadian law is, but I know in this country that those buildings are usually open to the public. It's the third and most violent clash between police and protesters at the legislature in the past 5 years. Critics blame the Conservative government for a growing number of problems in the province, everything from the death of poor people who can't find affordable housing to the death of people in Walkerton who drank contaminated water last month. We have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hello. This is AT&T Message Delivery Service with a prepaid message from someone who tried to call you but couldn't reach you.
Go ahead.
Robert Khanunyan Singh. This is the ambassador speaking. My spaceship is en route down to the pier of Santa Cruz. So if your antenna gets ran over, then it was too high. It's not my fault. Well, I'll be anticipating having dinner with you. And my relatives, all 7,900, Gray, one of them. Off I go. Back to your pirate radio.
This shows you that the aliens are also involved in supporting ending the sleeping ban. We'll see what we can do about that caller. I don't know what to say about that one. Like to point out, however, that there is a guest coming into town for one day. I believe it's the 19th and the 20th. That will be Calamity Jane Immler. She will be coming to Santa Cruz for one day. This is the woman whose protests and hunger fast, 1985 and 86, produced the first cold and rainy night shelter, the Cedar Street shelter, and also broke the logjam on acquiring the River Street mini shelter property. She has been a voice for homeless protest, and she has been a body out there, not just a voice, not just a talking head, out there putting her body where her mouth is. She'll be in town for a day. If you want to get in touch with Jane, give a call to 423-HUFF. Maybe we can arrange something. I'm not sure what her schedule is going to be like, but I'm hoping that we can find some way to do that. We have, however, come to the end of our rope because the lynching party has arrived. They're going to be putting on their stuff. Thank you very much for being with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And do tune in next time. We're going to be returning on Thursday. And, of course, tonight at Harvey West Park, we will be doing our thing. Come on down there at Du Bois and Harvey West Boulevard and give a call to 423-HUFF between shows. We'll get in touch with you. Thanks for being with us.
Around her. living for the music, the love and the laugh. Hooray for the riffraff. Migrating drifters, busters on the streets, minstrels and gypsies with no shoes on our feet, oh, rovers and rovers, nomad souls, rank and feral vagabonds laying down the bedroll. Wooden shoe Luddites.